Good morning, everyone. This is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is TS Radio. Our show this morning, of course, deals with veterans' issues, not only what's going wrong, but what can go right under the right circumstances. Before we get to our guest today, I want to remind everyone of the protest, or rally, more or less, on the mall, the National Mall in Washington, D.C., tomorrow. And Aaron Brockovich will be there as a speaker. It's Operation Stand Together. You can get more information about it at operationstandtogether.org. And that's Vincent Deem who's putting that on. And all the information you need is there on that site. Any contact information, any information about the rally itself is all there. That's operationstandtogether.org. And these are veterans getting together basically to emphasize the lack of care and the mistreatment they have received after going to war for this country. When they come home, of course, what happens to them is just unforgivable. And so if you can be there, be there. Everybody is cordially invited, and do what you can do. Our guest this morning is running a home called the Baptist Home, and it's for seniors and veterans, many of whom are seniors. And he has gone to great lengths trying to establish a community for them where they are safe and cared for and where they can receive help if they need it, whatever kind of help they are needing. And a lot of times that it tends to be emotional. And one of the things we will be talking about, excuse me, everyone, I'm sorry about that, is the fact that many of these people have suffered injuries that they don't appear on the outside. So with that, please help me welcome Tommy Good to the show. Tommy, welcome, and thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you, Marty. I'm glad to be on your show. Thanks for inviting me.
What was your idea for this program that you're running? Can you tell us a little bit about the home and what happens there?
Sure. Well, the Baptist Home is a charitable senior aging organization here in Missouri, and we have residential care for persons who are aging. But our mission is to love and care for and provide for aging humanity wherever they are. So we partner internationally as well as here in the U.S.
Okay.
But our primary mission is to provide a safe, loving, caring environment for people.
Do you know, one of the shows that I do on Sunday evenings, Tommy, is guardianship abuse, and it as performed by these professional guardians that are doing it to profit from the estate of the elderly. They just rob them blind. And at the same time, they will isolate them in these god-awful nursing homes where they're abused and neglected. And I think a lot of fears people have that regardless if they end up in one of these places, you know, it's just a death sentence for many of them. And they're isolated. They are not allowed contact with their family. They're not allowed to participate in their religious activities. They're basically just totally closed off and left to wither away. Now, you don't operate that way there, do you?
Absolutely not. Our the Baptist Home is has been in service for over 100 years now. And we began by offering a safe and charitable home for those who didn't have resources or family support many, many decades ago. But currently, we are I think, among the good and caring places for people to come and live. We create community. We have a Christian value system. We have trained and qualified staff. And what I hear, I don't work inside the home. I work for the corporate office. But what I hear from our residents and from our community is that this is really a great place. People are happy. It is a home. It isn't a a convalescent center.
Yeah,
it's a
right.
Place to live and enjoy life.
Okay. In part of your promotional material, Tommy, you talked to something referred to as moral injury. Could you explain to our audience exactly what that is?
Sure. Moral injury is a category of woundedness, as some people refer to it as a tearing of the soul. Others talk about it as being one of those hidden wounds of war. It's often associated with PTSD, though it is increasingly understood to be a separate category of care. It's often the result of serving in combat and or hostile environment. And the definition that we use in a simplified version is moral injury results from having made difficult choices under extreme conditions, experiencing moral anguish, events, or duties. Witnessing these moral acts or behavior are behaving in ways that profoundly change moral conscience and identity and the values that support them. Moral injury is found in feelings of survivor guilt, grief, shame, remorse, anger, despair, mistrust, betrayal by authorities, and in its most severe forms, it can destroy moral identity and the will to live. So the struggle of combat veterans to return to civilian life can be even more difficult because of these devastating kind of spiritual wounds that they
mm-hmm.
carry. I think about injury as anything that impairs our ordinary function of life.
Yes.
And moral injury is certainly a woundedness. And it shows up in a lot of ways. You know, Marty, it shows up in other kinds of behaviors. You know,
mm-hmm.
violence, drug abuse, withdrawal. And one of the things that drives me every day is that we have at least 21 service veterans a day committing suicide. So it is extremely serious, and thank God the military, the VA, Office of Rural Health, is beginning to respond with resources that help those of us in clergy ministry to be able to be
mm-hmm.
better helpers to people with moral injury.
You know, I think one of the issues you've highlighted here, which is the fact that many people who are sent into war, their natural inhibition to doing what they're doing, what they're being ordered to do, is overriding everything else. Their sense of humanity, what they're doing is maybe uncalled for, wrong on its face. And these people are affected by this, and they come home, and I keep telling people, we sent them into hell, and we brought them back, and we expect them to be the same, and they're not. All of this rah-rahing the military, I mean, God bless our military, yes, for defense purposes, but when it's used for offensive purposes, I have an objection. And like I say, we have sent these people to do terrible things. And then when they come back and they are not the same person, they cannot possibly be the same person. They have seen things and done things the majority of us cannot imagine in our nightmares. And they come back.
That's right.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just thinking out loud with you about this, that that they are changed to the, you know, some more severely than others. Obviously, some have more skills and abilities to cope and recover, but many just get lost in the process, and
yes.
they feel ashamed of what they've been part of
yes.
and or guilty. And when they were doing what they were ordered to do, trained to do, and maybe even needed to do in that moment. One of the more graphic, let me just give you a graphic kind of illustration of what moral injury may look like in the life of a military person. The story goes like this. There was a young man, and this is a recent war engagement. Young man had a dream of becoming a truck driver. So he joins the military with the promise that he would be trained and his service time would be driving trucks. So he is lead truck driver of a convoy, a military convoy in Iraq. And part of his training and part of his responsibility as the lead driver is to never stop, no matter what. He can't stop. Because should he stop, then his whole convoy of fellow soldiers become a higher target for the enemy, and others will die. So he's driving the convoy down the highway, you know, and someone in front of him in a village shoves a small child out in front of his truck. His training says to him he cannot stop. His heart, everything in him wants to stop, but the consequences of stopping would be too great, so he doesn't stop. Then when he comes home and comes back to his family, he and his 10-year-old comes who wants to sit in daddy's lap. He's unable to hold his own child because
right.
all he can now see is that child. So that's very graphic, but Marty, it shows us how disturbing these injuries are.
Do you know, Tommy, I talked to a veteran here where I live a couple years ago. I had a sit down with him, and this was a man who was obviously suffering a lot of problems, just needed to talk, and I was trying to get help for him. And at the time, I was a novice at this VA thing and didn't know where to go, and I was trying. But anyway, so I'm talking to him, and I said, "What is it? What is it? There's something here that is just haunting you. What is it?" And he started crying and said, when I was in Iraq, he said, we bombed a village there, a small town. And he said everybody was cheering. And he said we ran into the town, what was left of it. And he said there were body parts everywhere. And he said there was a small girl, he said maybe 2 to 3, laying there who was still alive, but he said very close to death. And he said, I picked her up. And he said, I was holding her and rocking her as she died. And he
yeah.
said, it overwhelmed me to know that I had caused the end of this child's life. And he said, when
right.
I looked around and saw the carnage we had caused, and he said, and nobody could tell me exactly why we had done this other than we were ordered to. Why did we do this? Why did we do this to these people? And he said, they haunt me in my sleep. He said, I see them when I'm awake. He said, these people looking at me with that question in their eyes, why? Why? And he said, I can't live with it. And about 2 months later, Tommy, he committed suicide.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that's such tragedy.
You know, and these people are out there and they need help. They need people to reach out to
right.
them. They need people to speak with them. They need a safe place to go. And my problem
right.
with the VA, Tommy, is this handing out of these horrendous, horrendous medications.
Yeah.
And a lot of these studies that have been done on this number of suicides that you're mentioning in the military each day actually turn out to be the result of combinations of these deadly psychotropic drugs given to these veterans and then told them to take them at night before they go to bed in massive doses when all the background information on them says never to administer them at night within 4 hours of bedtime because it can cause your heart to stop. And
yeah.
these people die in their sleep. And they say, oh, they took their medication wrong. They committed suicide. Now, I don't doubt a fair number of them actually wanted to. This may have been an easy escape for them. I don't know. And we'll never know because we weren't them and we weren't there in that moment. But, you know, I question that. I would rather see something like what you're doing, providing a safe environment, giving these people time. Go ahead.
Right. I want to just share with you what I think is a really valuable resource, and you may be interested in looking at it more, but it's called The Clergy Connection. It is a publication by the VA Office of Rural Health and the National VA Chaplain Center. And they began some years back collaborating between the mental health and clerk and the chaplains to develop a process for helping prepare clergy in the community to be more able and more have greater capacity for working with veterans with these injuries. And so, you know, they have inspired me. You ask influences Dr. Rita Brock and her, all of the work that she's done at Soul Repair Center, Bright Divinity School in Texas. These are all great voices that are helping to find solutions and create capacity at the community level where people live every day. One of the research surveys by the Office of Rural Health discovered when they surveyed some clergy in rural areas of the country about the things that they were encountering in the lives of veterans. The list are five: marital and family problems, grief and spiritual concerns related to military service, problems with alcohol and drugs, problems related to anger or violence, and then finally difficulty with moral transgressions made during wartime. And and the probably the honest part of that is that veterans are so reluctant to share these deep stories because they feel people won't understand if they weren't there, or that they weren't a fellow military personnel with them, or that they feel so guilty and ashamed of their story that they don't want to share it. They're afraid others will think harshly toward them, you know. So getting, you're right about getting the story out. I think personally that is the greatest gift we can give, is to help someone who's been in these combat situations to have a safe, caring, compassionate place and person to share, finally tell that story.
Well,
I think
that begins, Tommy,
the healing process.
And I think it's very important that these people have people to talk to who have been in that situation, who do understand.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
I think that's just imperative. You cannot, in my estimation, take someone who's detached from this, like, say, a therapist or somebody who's never encountered this, never been in that situation, never been required to do what was done, and expect to understand or to relate at all. But you can sit one veteran down with another who's been there, and they can talk to each other on a level that you or I couldn't speak to them with an understanding. I think, too, I hear a lot of people complain about, well, they come home and you know, and then the next thing you know, they're on drugs and they're drinking and everything. This is self-medication. This is somebody who's crying out, you know, I can't deal with it day to day of what I remember. And they're trying to dull their senses, trying to dull their memory to have a moment's peace. You have to understand where that's coming from.
As someone has said, it's a very long road home when coming back. And you correctly identified early on that, you know, we send our young men and women into hostile places in the most complex of situations. And they do their job, but then they have to come back home, and they are different. And they have to re-enter, and there are not enough resources to help them. So part of our mission here through Veterans Care Ministry that the Baptist Home is leading out in is to help build awareness and to help mobilize churches and faith communities, to help equip clergy and those who are in a pastoral role, and then to create networks. Not just among faith communities, but in the community itself, networks that help provide a sustainable and a holistic web of care for those who have been in military and their families, because the family is equally traumatized. The family is going to war too in their own way, and so if we could get more responsible about being a caring community during the deployment and then following the deployment when that military person is back home, I think we would see fewer failures in life situations, and we would see stronger families, and consequently, we would see stronger communities as a result.
I agree. And I think at the very least, we owe these people that served no less than this. We
do owe them.
I just don't think you can expect this from another human being, and then when you bring them home, say, well, you chose that. That's what you decided to do. If they hadn't, it would have been you that went, but you didn't go. And so, you know, we do owe these people, and the least we owe them is to understand what has happened
right.
to them and what they
right.
currently need. Now, with your home, Tommy, you work with all faiths, right? This isn't confined to just...
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's what one of the things I was trying
to... We're trying to reach out. We are a... We, the Baptist Home, are a Christian charitable organization.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our identity. But we're reaching out to partner with, other Christian communities, other people who are serving to the spiritual needs of people, wherever they may be in the community. We're partnering with military service organizations. We're partnering with health providers. You know, one of the great needs that's been discovered, Marty, is the need for ministers in the community and mental health providers to have a relationship with each other where they can be mutually supportive. Because sometimes, someone is having a problem with their marriage or in their life, they go to their minister. But if the minister doesn't have the skills or necessary insights to help them deal with that, if they have a relationship with a mental health provider in that community, it just gives them more options, and it strengthens what and the reverse of that is true. If the mental health provider has a trust relationship with ministers in the community, then they can refer whenever that is more appropriate. And we see that as one
right.
of the great needs for closing the gap of care that's available to people. Quit siloing and start sharing.
Yeah.
What we can with
right.
each other at the community.
I think that is actually a good idea. I think if everybody did work together in the perfect world, you know, things would be tremendously different.
Right.
How much cooperation, help, resources do you get from the Veterans Administration?
Well, I have a certification for using their training resources, so I am a certified trainer with the VA through the Office of Rural Health. And then they provide us – that is a huge resource they provide us with. The other is obviously is knowing the persons who are in the position of VA chaplain's offices and being able to know how to refer to them. We have good partnerships here locally with the Vet Center, which is a service provider organization, with some of the veteran service organizations. So all of us are trying to understand, you know, work together. We're a member, for example, of the Partners in Care with the National Guard. National Guard and my chief chaplain and myself are going to do some joint training in communities across the state. I attend the Joining Community Forces Network, which is about 80 or 100 different veteran-related groups and service providers that meet quarterly to share and strengthen our community capacities. So, you know, there's a lot of... I find a lot of openness. The other part of that is the VA is a medical care facility and organization, so they're bound by regulations and, you know, and guidelines. But we're finding a lot of openness and cooperation, and the people that I'm working with mostly, to the most part, are receiving good help and benefits from the VA resources. In fact,
okay.
VA is expanding here in my area. They're expanding and creating a new medical facility here in the Springfield, city
mm-hmm.
of Springfield, that will make those services more available. Part of the challenge is access, obviously, not just qualifications, but access. And
right.
the closer we can get services to people in communities, the better off everybody is at that point. So I'm excited about that part of it.
Okay. Tommy, I have an email here that is asking a question that I know the answer to because I read through your material. But the emailer here is asking, and they're from Springfield, Missouri. They
yeah.
want to know what the cost is, and they said that they have – I'm paraphrasing here. This is a very long email. But they said that they at one time had applied to another similar setup and that they were asked to turn over all of their assets, everything
yeah.
they had in order to be in this place. Now, you don't do that, if I understand your material correctly, right?
That's correct. We have limited space in all of our facilities, but people are put on a list of as come. So, you know, we don't play any favorites. We ask people to come and get on a list. Oftentimes it's a waiting list, and
mm-hmm.
work with our administrators for qualifications,
mm-hmm.
get all their questions answered, and then find out whether or not this is an appropriate choice for them whenever the
mm-hmm.
time comes. So I would just invite that person to go to the Baptist home in Ozark, Missouri, and speak
uh-huh.
with our administrator and in a meeting with her and get some of those answers. I think the perception is incorrect that you have to turn over all your assets.
Well, I know that, like I say, going back again to the fact that I deal with a lot of these guardianship issues, I have seen this happen numerous times,
right.
Where people are expected to sign over absolutely everything, or it is taken by force from them by a predatory guardian.
Right.
But I wanted you to clear this up, that in your facility,
you
may use assets to pay for that care. But if those run out, you don't kick the people out, do you?
Absolutely not. In fact, we have a dedicated foundation that provides more than $2 million charitable care every year.
That's excellent.
Through people who give passionately to help provide resources
mm-hmm.
for those who need it. The other is, mm-hmm. I think that our model of care is one that is validating and affirming and life enhancing.
Mm-hmm.
We have on all of our campuses, we have a pastoral care person whose full-time ministry is to be there and provide
mm-hmm.
spiritual support and care. We have
mm-hmm.
opportunities for learning and sharing and worship, and along with the support services of healthcare.
Mm-hmm. And to me, this is just, I think you're a shining example. Can be done when you put your energy towards something positive instead of something negative. I see in so many things that I deal with, if I look at the amount of energy people are expending doing the wrong thing intentionally.
Yeah.
And
right.
the mess that they go through and create simply from the nexus of greed, of
right.
discompassionate, you know, just no empathy, no sympathy. I want, you've got it. I'm going to take it from you. And if they took all of that energy, as you people
right.
appear to have done, and moved it towards doing something positive, everybody profits. You know, in one way or another, everybody gains something. And,
absolutely.
You know, as we get older, it becomes harder and harder. Life becomes more uncertain. Where you're
yes.
going to be? Can you afford to be there? Will you be taken care of? Will there be
right.
people there, you know, that will look after you? without exploiting you, without neglecting or abusing you. And I think this is extremely important. I was reading through also some of these stories from people who have been a resident or are a resident in your facility, and they all seem extremely happy with where they're at. And they all look, where there's pictures, they all look well cared for. Now, I understand, you know, PR and all that, but that doesn't appear to be what this is. This appears to be genuine. These people don't have that haunted look to them that we see people in other homes. What do you think the overall attitude is within the facility itself?
Well, I think those who work in the facility as staff and employees have a commitment to love our residents. And we also carry more than that. We have what we believe is a value system that says we're to be honest and compassionate and to show up every day to do the best we can. The other is we do work in ways to create a sense of openness and community where people are free to come and go. They form friendships. We have very low turnover in terms of caregivers as well as residents. And I think it just all works together. You know, it's a long history of faithfulness that those who have led the Baptist home all these decades continue to reinforce. So it's from the top down, I assure you. And thank you for making those observations. I think they're correct.
I do too. My overall impression, and I'm someone that runs on gut instinct, I'll tell you. My overall impression was this was on the up and up, and I've been exposed to too much of the other side of this. I have another question here from another listener who is in Indiana, and she would like to know how your facility differentiates from, say, a standard nursing home. Is there any difference? Do you provide the equivalent of nursing home care for those who might need it?
We have multiple levels of service. We have those who are in independent living, where they either own and or lease an independent living apartment or type housing on the campus. And then we have what you might think of as the more traditional group home that is also residential, but it has different levels of care. We do not do acute care. Our most intense level is called intermediate care. And so we can help people who are beginning to develop expressions of dementia and Alzheimer's. But we don't specialize in the acute care. We're more able to care for people who simply need somebody to help them manage their safety, their food, their medicine, and to guide, you know, to provide a caring environment for them.
Well, and I, like I say, I think as we get older, this becomes more and more relevant and important, is to be in a safe environment.
Right.
I talk to many elderly people that feel extremely vulnerable and almost, and in many cases, I would say absolutely scared. And they're even more terrified of these nursing homes. I don't blame them for that. I myself live in mortal fear of ending up in one of those places. But go ahead.
I would just a couple of things, Marty. I would encourage any person interested in learning more about the Baptist Home to go to our website. I think it's got quite a lot of information there. And it's simply thebaptisthome.org, and you can see information about each of our campuses and more about our philosophy of care and so forth. The other is if you're in an area where we are located, we have an open door invitation to people to come in and visit. and see firsthand the quality of care that we provide.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's something else, and I have another email here, and you just mentioned visiting, that was asking, again, I have to go back to these nursing homes where these people are under guardianship many times and they're not allowed visitors. Do you allow open visiting? Like, can people come and go to visit people without hindrance?
Absolutely. Friends, we have a lot of people who've come from, like, area congregations. And so when they come into our home, their church family will continue to come and visit them and be a part of their lives. We have a lot of volunteers. We have auxiliaries in all of our homes that create opportunities for the persons in the community to come and be a part of interaction with our residents.
Mm-hmm.
So we try and not let anyone be isolated.
Yes.
In that regard.
I think that is the worst thing, not only for seniors, but for veterans, is to experience
right.
isolation. I think it's devastating to the mind.
Yes.
think it's the worst thing that can happen. And you know, the other thing that strikes me too about your facility is there seems to be a lot of activity. And
yes.
Well, you know what I'm saying. And many times you get into these
right.
senior care centers, and it's like walking into a tomb. But
right.
there seems to be a lot of activity, a lot of participation, a lot of coming and going. And I think this is important for people, not just seniors, but veterans also, is to have this interaction occurring all the time. It keeps them active. It keeps them involved. It keeps them exposed so that they are able to, like in the case of the veteran, to more easily assimilate back into the normal population. You cannot put somebody in a hospital or in one of these homes and then just walk away from them and expect them to get better. It's not going to happen. They need all of this. They need the activity. They need the hubbub of, you know, daily life. But also, as I've said several times, they need to feel safe. And
absolutely.
So I have to agree that you're on the right track there. Now, is this Baptist home that we're speaking of, is this the only facility you have?
No, we have a home in Ozark, Missouri, which is in the Springfield
mm-hmm.
area. We have one in the northern part of the state in the community of Chillicothe.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the original home is located in the beautiful Arcadia Valley in the eastern
okay.
part of Missouri. And
mm-hmm.
we're in the process of developing a new home in a community between Jefferson City and Columbia in the community of Ashland. And we're just beginning to do infrastructure and development on that property. So that's where we have our physical facilities.
Okay. And I have another question here from an emailer that says they're asking, again, this is a long email, so I'm paraphrasing here, but they're asking if in your facilities, is this more like assisted living where people actually basically take care of themselves other than there's medical care available if they need it or other services if they need it, but they basically live in a unit where it's basically their own little home.
That's right. When they're in the group facility, they're either in a private or semi-private space where they can have, you know, things that are their personal
mm-hmm.
Identity kinds of things. And so it becomes their own place of living. But you're right. It is assisted living. It isn't,
mm-hmm.
you know, we help them with what they need help with, but we
right.
encourage them toward independence in every aspect of their lives.
I think that's good. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
I think also, again, in either case, whether it's veterans or seniors or senior veterans, that thing of I think self-autonomy, you know, being able to care for yourself, make your own decisions for the most part, being able to conduct your life as you normally would have is extremely important in keeping that person viable. When you take those things away from a person, when you take away their right to decide or to do or to manage even on a limited scale their own life, I think you have basically destroyed the core of the person. So I would rather see an assisted living facility where people are encouraged to do as much as they possibly can, you know, or as they think they're able to. You might still have to help them, you know, but they're encouraged to do. I think it keeps them alive. I think it keeps them vibrant. I think it keeps their mind fresh. I've noticed, Tommy, with a lot of people who are dealing with elderly who have dementia or the onset of Alzheimer's, is they immediately begin treating these people as if they're the retarded child, if you know what I'm saying. They start, you know, instead of trying to, what do I want to say, excite them enough to get them to come back to participate as much as they're able to. And I see this progression, this quick regression, I should say, into a dysfunctional life. And I think that should be avoided. I think it's extremely important to keep these people engaged. And
absolutely.
Go ahead.
One of our resources as well, in addition to providing residential care, is we do education and advocacy. So we are constantly trying to improve our own skill and knowledge base, but we're offering that and as a service of our organization to churches and communities and other providers wherever we can. We work internationally with about 7 different culture groups, helping them develop capacities for caring for elderly, and then we offer training workshops and leadership seminars throughout, you know, here where we're based. But I thought I'd maybe share and follow up with something of your observations. On our website, you can find this, but here, Marty, are our 5 principles. We believe in respecting the individuality of each resident and recognize that each resident has value and deserves to be treated with dignity. That's our number one value and principle. We believe in protecting
that.
We believe in protecting the freedoms of our residents, which includes making choices, being themselves, as long as it doesn't endanger or infringe the rights and safety of others. We believe that each resident deserves to be heard and to know that we love and care about them. And we believe that the most difficult issues in all of life are emotional issues, loneliness, disappointment, hopelessness, loss, and grief, which become increasingly difficult to deal with as we age. And so we are dedicated then to helping our residents cope with these issues and to walk with them through that process. The other, finally, is that we believe in building meaningful relationships with our residents and to help them live the best life possible. So those are our operational principles, and that is pervasive throughout our organization and with everyone who works for our organization, whatever their job is, you know?
Right. Okay, and then I have another question here. This one is from Ozark, Missouri. And the gentleman is asking, do you have activities that people can participate in? Do you have community events? What do you have going on as far as keeping people engaged socially?
Sure. Well, we have an employed activities director and social director whose responsibility is to keep things going that are meaningful for our residents. So we do group type of activities. We just built at Ozark, at our facility there, over the last few years, we built a $5 million enhancement to that just for the purpose of activities. It is an activity center. And we have volunteer groups. We have musicians and church organizations, student organizations, coming in and out of our facility, providing programs and points of personal care, especially during holidays and birthdays and other special events. So So I think we have a really full program of engagement, involvement, activity at the level that our residents are able to be a part of that.
I think that's great. I think that there again is another observation I've made. Many of these nursing homes or other nurse or assisted living facilities provide none of these services. It's basically, you've got space here, pay us, goodbye. And I think, you know, I mean, really, you know that it's true. They don't provide an actual community. And
well,
I think
let me say that, there are state regulators in every state that regulates and monitors the well-being of aging people and also those that provide services for them, whether it's in their home or it's in facilities like ours. But here is a unique, perhaps a uniqueness of the Baptist home is that we don't receive any funding from any government agency or organization. We provide support when people need it through our own benevolent fundraising and donations that people are so generous with. And with the good management, we have excellent conservative management of all of our facilities and everything we do. So that's a part of who we are as well. Additionally, then, we want our homes to meet the highest expectations and standards that we're capable of providing. We're certainly not the most posh and polished, but we are safe, we are beautiful, we're in great locations, our communities love us, we've been there a long time, and we consider ourselves partners in the community and with the people who we serve and love.
Okay. I've got another email question for you here. This one's coming from Springfield, Missouri, and they want to know, if they became a resident at one of your facilities, would they be able to come and go from the facility? Like, say, for instance, this gentleman says, if I wanted to spend the day with my grandchildren, would I be able to leave and do that
Absolutely.
And come back?
Yep, as long as that person is independently capable of those actions, then we don't lock the doors. You know, I mean, they are free to come and go, be a part of their community. We many of our residents, I've already indicated, are part of a church community, and many of them will go and participate in church events and other social activities. We're in one of the greatest entertainment areas of the nation here at Branson.
Right.
And so we have a lot of folks who go down to Branson for a show or go out for dinner. We are just a great open community.
I think that's wonderful. I really do. I think it's so important for people to, as I said before, maintain their own autonomy, their own decision-making, to be able to engage where they want to, as long as it's nothing detrimental.
Absolutely.
And I think that is extremely important. Can I ask you, Tommy, when you bring veterans into this, how is this, how is the interaction between them and, say, the senior community? I know many veterans are seniors, but do you have senior or veterans coming in who are not what you would classify as senior, but need a place anyway? Yeah.
Part of why Veterans Care Ministry, which is the Baptist Home's expression of care for veterans, exists, is so that we can not only help our caregivers in the residential home have a better understanding of how to support those who live in our homes who are also veterans, but also how to help our communities create a more caring, opportunities in churches and networks and relationships outside the home. So we're trying to do both. We care and create these enhanced understandings of how to help the veteran in the home. And we celebrate them. In fact, you might see in some of our promotional information where we celebrate veterans and we you know, do those things that honor them and honor their service and that of their family. But we, in a proactive way, are wanting to engage in the community of service providers and churches so that we're creating this larger, more holistic response.
Excellent. Okay, I have several emails here asking how they can contact you. So if you want to give out your web address and information there, and they're all, many people are asking how they can go about contributing to this. So if you would want to give that out too, Tommy.
If your listeners are on Facebook, I have a Facebook group that's public. You can go there. It's called Veterans Care Ministry Network. And then the other, we have a Baptist Home Facebook page, simply called The Baptist Home. And then our website is thebaptisthome.org. And you can find information on in any of those links of how to communicate with me. But I'm simply available through contacting one of the websites or by email at tgood@thebaptisthome.org.
Okay. You want to spell that out for him?
T-G-O-O-D-E at thebaptisthome.org.
Okay, there we go. And so if you, for those of you who think you might want to consider contributing to this to help out here, the information you need is there on those sites, or you can contact Tommy directly and he can help you out with that.
Hey, we have a safe and secure online giving option when they go to our website.
There you go. And I like things like that where you don't have to go through a second, third, fourth party to get to you.
Right.
I think that it, and it expedites things, you know. And I think it's good that people are willing to – I think this is a good example. And we need good examples. We do. I keep in the guardianship issue saying – people say, you know, oh, they're all guardians aren't bad. Well, bring me just one. Just one that isn't, you know, that isn't exploiting and profiting. Bring me, and in 7 years, that person has not shown up. And when we talk about these nursing homes and assisted living facilities where people are just absolutely thrown to the wolves, I kept saying, show me one that isn't. And thank you, Tommy, for showing up today. Because finally, we got one. Finally. And, you know, you're hard to come by.
Marty.
Yes,
it's been my pleasure. Your comments are very generous, and I receive them and welcome them on behalf of everyone who works for seniors and are in our homes.
Well, I appreciate everything you're doing. I truly do. After years of bad news about facilities and what's happening to people in them, to hear about your facility and how you're conducting it and how these people are cared for and looked after. Thank you. This is this has been the highlight of my year so far.
Wow.
To finally get some good news. And I try to bring good news. I really do. It's hard to come by. It's hard to come by. And things are in such disarray. And as we age, we all need to think about this. What's happening to our senior citizens? Because this isn't right. And we have been conditioned by the media and the government and everything else to view seniors, we're referred to as the silver tsunami, something deadly, damaging.
Right.
Yeah, that works for me.
Yeah.
So,
well, I hope we can
know,
keep the conversation going, Marty.
Yep.
No, we will.
I do too. And please, if there's anything at all we can do, Tommy, to help you out there, please let us know. And before we go here, please give out your contact information one more time for the people who didn't get it all.
Yeah, thebaptisthome.org is our website. You can find The Baptist Home on Facebook. You can find Veterans Care Ministry Network on Facebook. And my email is TGOODE@thebaptisthome.org.
Thank you very much. And thank you for being our guest today. I truly appreciate
God's
you taking the time.
On you and all of your listeners for his good and for your good.
Thank you. Thank you. And to everyone listening out there, thank you for tuning in today. And for those who emailed, I covered as much of it as I possibly could. If you have more questions, please get a hold of Tommy at the address he gave you, or go to his organization on Facebook, and you can download everything you want to off of their site. Talk to these people. It appears to me they're on the up and up all the way around. Any information you need or questions you need to ask, they seem ready to answer. So that's a rare thing in today's world. I would recommend this place. We will be back next Friday, of course, with another show on veterans issues. In the meantime, thank you, everybody who tuned in. Thank you to everyone who emailed. And we will see you next week. Goodbye, everybody.